This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about some of our favorite hidden gems and secret tech cards. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we are talking sleepers. We have our favorite hidden tech, secret tech, whatever. Hidden secret tech cards that you probably don't know about, but you should put in your decks, and we're going to convince you of that. And joining me and laughing at my horrible intro, we have Krim and Tomer and Phil. How's it going today, guys? That was a good intro, wasn't it?
Sucks.
Yeah, great. Flawless. I'm just really excited because now all of our secrets will be spilled. Every hidden tech. Okay, maybe not everyone. Yeah. But I am excited to talk about some of these cards that I've been playing with.
I wanted to force this issue just because there's one card I'm like, guys, I'm not crazy. This is a card that I really want. So let's do a podcast.
I swear to God,
at some point, so I can talk about it.
Ugh. If this is Fade Away or Floodgate, Tomer, I swear to God.
Three mana blue sorcery.
Nah!
It's a board wipe. It's great.
So that's our plan for today. And we got some good ones. But before we get into that, we got some sponsors. Our show today is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and foil armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Today's show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more, and pages a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance, and pages a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order's processed. And you can even head over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish to get 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently talked about salty commanders, and our top comment comes from Michael Collins, 4534. Says, nothing makes me saltier in the command zone than the recently ungame-changed Urza Lord High Artificer, which is definitely a salty card. I'm curious. We could do a whole podcast on this. Do you think they should have unbanned that? Like, is it correct to, like, unban or, like, game-changer salty commanders? It seems like they're really leaning on the game-changer list to, like, manage salty commanders. Is that actually, like, the best technique, though, or is that way too much to get into right now?
I think Urza in specific, it is very, very good, right? If it's one of those cards where I feel kind of bad if I tutor it or play it and say like, whoop,
yeah,
it's on now. You can feel free to stop me or try to.
Yeah, it's like, I think the article said it's like, well, it's not cool as a commander, but everybody knows it's not good. And it's not cool as it's not chill as a commander, but in 99, it's fine. And I'm just like, as an artifact player, I'm like, that's not true. That's not true at all.
It's only fine because the odds of you drawing it are somewhat lower. So some games you won't actually draw it in the 99.
But you can say for that for every game changer.
Yeah, that is also true.
If I don't draw it, it's fine.
Anyway, let's talk some hidden tech cards. And let's start with Tomer, since Tomer, you're the one that pitched this idea. You got the card. And I want to tell you how ridiculously crazy you are with your pick. So let's start with you.
It's going to be stacks.
All right. Okay. I promise I have safer bets later on, but I'm going to go with a Hail Mary as Ryan Gosling.
Great movie.
Would approve of it. Great movie. Okay. So one of my favorite cards that I will never afford is, what is it? Gauntlet of Might, I think it's called. There's like two of them. There's Gauntlet of Power, which is like the call
the one that I know where you're red going cards? With
this. Yeah. Gauntlet of Might. Let me look it up 1 second. It's the Gauntlet of Might.
This is like $500.
Yeah. It's from beta, and then it was reprinted in Unlimited, and it's 4 mana artifact. Red creatures get +1/+1, and all mountains tap for double mana. That add an additional red. Great card. It's great. Nobody ever runs it. And why does nobody ever run it? Because I think like the baseline is like $450, as Krim said. It's too expensive. It's wildly expensive. And I was like, man, I love mono red. I've been a big mono red connoisseur for a while now. And good golly, is this card very good? And I was like, but wait a minute. I stumbled upon a card, a very weird card, that is essentially a Gauntlet of Might for less than a dollar. So if you are not willing to spend half your rent on a single piece of cardboard, may I interest you in the $1 alternative that is basically just as good? It is Chaos Moon. Chaos Moon is a 4-mana red enchantment. So same as Gauntlet of Might. Let's keep going. It says, during each player's upkeep, count the number of permanents. If that number is odd, all red creatures get +1/+1 and mounts produce an additional red when tapped for mana until end of turn. Exact same as Gauntlet of Might. It does have a little bit more, though. If the number is even, all red creatures get -1/-1, and mountains produce colorless mana instead of their normal mana until end of turn. But, okay. So it is a little bit worse, because like half the time, instead of being a Gauntlet of Might, it's called Gauntlet of like Feels Bads, right? Because your creatures get smaller. Your mouth is still tapped for mana, it's just colorless. But okay, here we go. My favorite style of mono red is Draw Go, because I love my Return the Favors, my forks, and everything like that. So Draw Go mono red is like my favorite way of doing it. And recently my favorite mono red deck is this like stupid Ben deck that I absolutely love playing. And it's, you know, you can cast spells. Most of your spells are instants. So you can cast spells even before the upkeep trigger happens. So if you have, what is it, an odd number, You're gaming. You wait until that triggers. You cast all your spells. You have double the mana. You're gaming. And then if it's an even number, you just cast your spells before that upkeep trigger happens. It's fine. You can also manipulate it too with like treasures and stuff like that. This card is this card not insane? Is this card not just like Gauntlet of Might, but less than a dollar? Come on.
So when I
stacks yourself.
When it, right? It stacks everybody. If there's other mono
it's also people. Stacks, sure.
So why do you want to play with a counting simulator?
That's my issue. I added this card to my judge's tower and I took it out very quickly because it really is just can you count to 100 every upkeep? And it's each upkeep, and it's everyone's permanence. It's not even your permanence. So you have to count every permanent at the table, every player's upkeep.
You count it once.
Tomer, wait.
Mark the differences,
you complain about day and night.
This is...
If you can complain about day and night, What in the world makes you
talk about time equity from last podcast, Tomer? How much time equity is being wasted as you count every permanent every turn?
What if I told you could run an extra ancient tomb in all your decks, but all those ancient tombs, they're less than a dollar. They're less than a dollar, these ancient tombs, but also you have to have day and night added to them. I would do day and night. You know what? I would do it. I don't know if I would.
Be very and brutally honest with me. Was this an idea on the toilet? I just need to know. Is this one of the?
Was this
a toilet idea?
I was pining for Gauntlet of Might in my Ben deck, and then I'm like, wait a minute. There is a card. There is another
Chaos Moon.
There is another. And so, look, you have to count all of them one time, and then you just count the differences as they happen. That's it.
Yeah, but what happens like when those things are tokens or treasures?
Let's set aside actually having to play with the card. So let's assume that doesn't matter, right? Let's assume the counting. Tomer has some strategy to be able to count it efficiently.
Come on.
Let's say that that was not a cost. Is the card good in then? Like, let's say you don't got to count it all. It just always is going to work the way it does. Like, is it good then?
Wait. Tomer, have you play tested this? Doesn't it just mean that the person before your turn plays 1/0/2 permanents and then hard stacks you in the case that you want to, like, if you build your deck to make use of this, your opponent just gets a freebie hard stacks on you, just Blood Moon you in your mono red deck?
But if you're draw go, right? Then you're never stacked out of it, right? Like if your spells are instants, then
you can cast them before the trigger.
In response to the upkeep trigger, then you can just cast your stuff normally. Yeah. But if you get the double,
and then you're stacked for the rest of the, unless
for the rest of
frees
that
you?
Turn. But like if you're playing Drago,
I don't know. That seems incredibly
risky. It refreshes every upkeep. And,
I mean,
you know,
can,
permanence
but
change.
It might not change.
Tomer, are you sure you're not a chaos gamer? Because like you say you aren't.
This is not chaos.
What is the name
it's
of this card?
It's called Chaos Mood. It's very misleading.
Is it
misleading?
It is. Tomer,
there's nothing chaotic about counting.
The line between that you drew between you and chaos is getting ever so thin, Tomer.
Look, if I told you it's a gauntlet moon, it's a gauntlet of might that costs $448 less. But you do have to do a little bit of counting during your games. Would you not be like, I'm game?
It's also kind of half
proxy.
A gauntlet of might, technically. Because half the time it's doing the opposite of gauntlet of might. I will say, Tomer, I halfway agree with you. Because I have had the same thought before. That, oh my god, this card seems like you could be really good in a mono red deck. And I bet I could like manipulate it in a way that I'm going to have it turned on a lot. And it's like, it's going to be so busted. But then when I actually got to the point of putting it in the deck, I just always landed on the... I don't want to do the work. So I think you might be right that it could be powerful in a mono red deck. I can't see myself wanting to do that amount of counting. So I don't think it'd be worth it for me just because of that. But I do see where you're coming from. And I think you could build a mono red deck that like is draw go or really good at putting things into play at instant speed. If you can make like tokens at instant speed, like tap to make a treasure or whatever, you can kind of manipulate the odd or even thing. So I could definitely, I don't know if I want a gauntlet of might that I have to build my deck around turning on every turn, but the main thing for me is just the counting thing. So I just can't get past how annoying it seems to play with. But I do think you're right that in mono red, I could see it actually being powerful if you don't mind. Like how some people love Cathar's Crusade and they just love manipulating the dice and they love like doing all that. That's not my thing, but if you just love counting up to a very high number every upkeep, then Chaos Moon's probably busted.
Come at the Commander Clash in an episode near you.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Oh,
okay,
God.
Well,
see, then we'll just edit out all the time spent counting. It'll be a five-hour game. Like, it'll actually be an hour, but 5 hours.
Yeah, we're going to give people counts. The illusion that this is going to resolve quickly, but it's not, right? Because it's going to be like the 17 hours count of counting
I
time.
I didn't do this. How many power minutes can be on a board at a given time in Commander? Five, 10?
Yeah, something know, like that. Fine. There's a token limit. Well, we need a token limit.
To be fair, I think because it is your permanent, you have to keep track of it.
Yes, oh, yes. Not my problem.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm not going to count for you, and I'm always going to err to the
you know
side
what's
of...
Gonna, it's going to be like 60, 61, then someone's going to crack a joke, and you're going to forget your spot and be like, oh, sorry, guys, 1, 2, 3, and like, oh, my God, this card's going to be a nightmare. Yeah.
Less than a dollar. All I'm saying.
Technically, if it's half of a gauntlet, it should be like $225, right? So financially,
what a deal.
Yeah, it's a great deal.
You're so up.
let's move on to our next hidden tech card. Phil, give us some hidden tech.
All right, so when we started or like sat on this topic, I usually have a list of cards that I curate or when I think of something, put it on this list for episodes like this. And I do have some of those cards, but one card I found while looking for new tech, so that means I haven't tested it yet, is it's called Dawnstrider. It was only printed in... Wait, I see you say this. I think it was only printed in Mercadian Mask. It's a 2-drop, 1/1 spell shaper, probably a dryad. And it says, as a spell shaper, it discards a card for 1 green, tap it, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt this turn. So you play this on 2, let it sit there, and might get wrath, that's fine. If not, you have a 1-mana fog in hand every turn cycle. It's just a fog. You play a card or discard a card for 1 mana, prevent all damage. And when I put this card in the chat, I knew Tuk said he played it, and it's oppressive, and it's a threat of activation. So in practice, probably nobody attacks you. And I think that's fine oppression for me. I'm not stopping you from doing anything. You don't even need to attack me. Then I'm not going to tap it. So it is in 0.08% of decks on EDH Rec. And maybe that's because it's too oppressive. I haven't tested it yet. It seems busted, though. I also got the old border foils, and I do have to test it. That might that's have helped in my decision to put this on here, but
I mean,
that's got to be busted.
I would
right?
avoid. I would avoid murdering it if it's old border foil.
I feel
there you go.
Wow, old border foil. You know how much it costs an old border foil? It's like $64.
It is,
yeah, it's
way
insane.
More expensive.
It was pretty modern. Pretty modern. Come on.
I mean, I love fogs. I don't know about the fog on a creature. I can get the repeatability, so that's nice, right? So that's something I do like. It's a 2-mana 1/1 though. Like, is it just gonna die?
Full disclosure. I'm putting it in Lornis, which is a creature deck, so I try to only play creatures there.
Okay, mm-hmm. That makes
this
sense.
This is a repeatable fog.
It is. I mean, that part's insane. That part's
very creature
good.
That's...
And, like, discarding a card can be an upside in the... What if you're a graveyard deck? You want to get something in the graveyard, reanimate it or something. So I could see it being, maybe, for me, at its best in actually, like, a graveyard deck where you can turn the discard into an upside or madness or whatever, like some sort of synergy piece.
The madness is crazy.
That's
if you want a discard outlet, that seems very, very good there, yeah. Although in graveyard decks, it just runs Borefrog, which we know is oppressive.
Yeah,
but it
works.
Different.
So maybe this works similarly.
I feel like Sporefrog's like very good with like the Marins and stuff where you can continually just constantly reanimate at this. But this one's more, it seems like more of a graveyard enabler where the discard outlet is kind of like, if you can be playing, if you can be building a deck that wants to be discarding cards, like for graveyard synergies or for madness, I feel like then it gets a lot better because then you can be proactive with it. Because sometimes, you know, you don't need to fog on that turn, but you can still, like, I don't know, discard a card that has madness on it for that 1 mana and then, you know, cast it for madness or something like that. And then I really like it. So if you can, like, if you have a reason to be discarding cards, I think it gets a lot better. But if you don't, I much prefer just having that fog in hand. Because I don't know. If I swing at you for 4, are you going to discard a card to stop the 4 damage? It's like, probably not, right?
But like, your fog,
I,
though?
I also think openly like displaying that you have an infinite amount of fogs, at least when I say infinite, like with once each turn, unless you have an untap, will make the entire table punch you every step of the way, all the way down to the bottom, right? Because they're like, well, we have to make somebody make him burn a fog so then we can start beating him with more damage. I think this instantly gets you targeted.
I'm already playing Lornis.
I think, Phil's already the problem, so what is he?
I guess that's fair.
I think there's upsides and downsides to that, right, I would say. Because, like, yes, it is true that I could see the table teaming up to get through the Dawnstrider and take you out. But at the same time, I could also see situations, as Phil mentioned earlier, where you're like, there's a Dawnstrider. I guess I'll attack Tomer instead of Phil, because he'll probably just Dawnstrider it anyway. So there is, like, some value I think you get out of just having it sit on the table. It probably depends on the politics of the table and, like, the position you're... Are you the archenemy? Does it look scary? If so, then people can team up and get through it. But if not, maybe it redirects some damage at your opponents, like a Ghostly Prison or something.
It's also, like, if you need to deal combat damage, because there's a lot of, like, very popular creatures that needs to do combat damage in order to do X, Y, Z.
Trigger or whatever,
professional face breakers need to deal combat damage to, you know, make the treasures and whatnot. Then, you know, then suddenly Phil's not a good target if he has the fog on hand.
Yeah, because he can discard a card and fizzle it. And then, I think I'm with Tomer, though, where I think I really want to be a graveyard deck because the activation gets much scarier if I'm thinking, and he benefits from discarding the card. Because the other way you look at this is like, we can just make him discard a card every turn. Eventually he's going to like run out of stuff to do. And like, I'm fine with that. So if I can get value out of like getting cards in the graveyard, then I think I'm all on board the Dawnstrider.
I'll test it out in generic Clash decks once I'm back on. It seems almost oppressive. Like, maybe, if you get roughed, sure. If you burn a removal spell on a 2-drop, that is also fine. So I think it's the threat of activation is the best part of it. It sits there and psychologically deflects damage.
I want to see it in action. I actually want to see, because I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I think it's worth testing at least.
What's more oppressive, Dawnstrider threatening fogs every single turn, or me having to cancel.
Oh God. Oh God. Can't that thread is way worse. That is way that I'm sick. I'm sick for that episode.
Let me know when you're playing BS Moon. Simple as that.
I'm so excited. Let me play Ben. Let me pay my boy.
Krim, give us some secret tech.
I mean, okay. I'm sorry. I guess it won't be as spicy as those because, like, wow, Chaos Moon and I guess Dawn Strider. Okay, well, know what? One that's really fun that'll get the whole table involved. That I've been playing with a lot more, and then I played with a few friends as well, and it's done numbers is Cheering Crowd.
Oh,
this card. For those that don't know what Cheering Crowd is, let me get the actual like text here real quick. Okay, so the Cheering Crowd card is a one and Grull hybrid, human citizen 2/2 at the beginning of each player's first main phase. That player may put a 1/1 counter on this creature. If they do, add a colorless for each counter on it. This is very group huggy, but it leads to a lot of fun. And more often than not, while everybody is speeding up the game, like every time that this has come down, like on two or at any point in the game, the game speeds up by like 5 turns. And we talked about time equity. This is the best way to have the most time because you're just going to give everybody a ton of mana. No one will say no. And then the one thing that you don't think about is this Cheering Crowd. It starts to knock on people's doors. And then you start having this like 15 like power creature. And I think it's just hilarious when it goes around cycles. It's just a lot of fun that really just gives you a big beater. While giving people mana. Whereas, like, if I gave you mana and had nothing, I'd be a little bit worried. But big mana and a giant beater does change things by a lot.
It's Descent into Avernus the Creature, essentially. Yes. Like, that's what it reminds me of. And
guess what?
I played with this card.
You'll never guess.
Is it Descent into Avernus? I mean, that... I have enjoyed a lot of games where Descent shows up, actually. I don't think I'd want all my games to be Descent into Avernus games, because it really does, like, just speed up the game super quick. But I've enjoyed some Descent to Avernus games. So even though I'm not convinced that Cheering Crowd is, like, an optimal card, like, if you're trying to win or whatever, I don't think I'd play it. But I think it could lead to a fun experience at the table and an interesting game. So I'd be down for seeing it for those purposes.
Like, speeding up the game for yourself, that's different. That's not as fun. Speeding up the game to where everyone partakes in it, that's fun. And so, like, because everybody builds a deck a certain way to probably also account for threats at a certain point in the game. But if everybody is just going, you know, cheat code mode, like infinite, like all these resources going to Christmas land, it gets real wacky real quick.
I mean, it's 2 mana. This is like the risk on this one to actually just cast it is actually pretty low, and it does get big. Like, if okay, so you play this on your next turn cycle. If you have 3 opponents, you're going to get 3 counters on it. No, it's going to be 4 counters on it. So it's going to be a 6/6 on the next turn cycle. So now you played a 2 mana creature, and then next turn when you get the swing of it, it's a 6/6. That seems big. I mean, that's assuming people say yes. If people start saying no, then
who's going to say no? Then
you'll just get the mana nobody else will.
Does this happen?
Can always say yes. I think this one's actually
good.
Wait,
does everybody get the mana?
Everyone gets the mana.
Yeah, so everybody gets the mana.
Whoever, when you say yes, on your turn, you can get the mana.
Doesn't this just cast a board wipe and then you never get this effect?
You drew a board wipe for you only playing a Cheering Crowd, right? Like, I did the opposite of overcommitting.
Could give people a leg up before they board wipe you, but like, yeah.
That was what I was wondering. Does this have the Marlin the Morn Song problem to some extent where, like, your opponents do the thing first? So, like, you play this, then your next opponent makes one, the next one two, next one three, and someone can use that mana to disrupt it before it gets back to you. Maybe people are just like, oh, it's going to be so much fun. Why would I bother to interact with this? It's just going to be, like, a good time for everyone. But I would worry a little bit that you hand out, like, 6 mana to opponents before you make 4 mana the next turn cycle.
This is not optimizing, I would say, in the way that, like, I am the one person that doesn't even like Secret Rendezvous because I don't even like giving my opponent cards.
Yeah.
But giving people cards versus giving them mana that also gives me mana, this is just right there at that sweet spot in group hug, if you would, where, like, why would my opponent want to kill this? Other than, like, when it gets to, like, being a 17-17 or something like that, right? Okay, then it's a little bit of a problem. But I think this is just at the sweet spot where no one wants to remove it because it helps them too.
Yeah, I could see that. Hey, it's gonna super fun.
It's going to help the big stompy battle cruiser decks more than it's going to help like the all my creatures, all my spells like 2 and 3, you know. Yeah. But like
the spell deck probably won't get as much advantage, but the one thing that is cool is then okay, let's say the big creature deck comes into play and they're just hard casting
dinosaurs.
These bombs.
Yeah.
Well, guess who's the problem? Probably not you, because you're not the one windmill slamming giant stompy dinos.
It's the reverse fill technique. It, you make other people the problem.
If you play a true crowd and I see somebody else is also running dinosaurs or like dragons, I'm killing the crowd. Effect. You know, like,
it's two mana, right?
So it's like, yeah, fine, it dies, but it's like, okay, it was a 2 mana investment. I think that's fine. Like,
yeah,
I'm down.
Two mana
I'm down
point,
for this card.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like, the humorous part is like, if I tell you, don't kill it, because then I need the mana to answer all the dinos.
I'm just killing it before the dinosaurs start dropping down the 8-drops and killing everyone. I don't know.
This card is gas.
Yeah, it seems Wait, fun. It definitely gas. Seems fun. Yeah.
It's a little like Belb. I think it's called Belb or something. There's this commander in
Golgari
that ramps everybody.
Yeah,
this one. This one. Like the person in front of you gets 3 mana already. Mm. 1, 2, 3.
Well, the person before you, right before you. Sure.
Yeah.
But like,
that's.
Again.
But then you get
4.
Right? 6 mana, potentially. I guess 5.
I mean, if that person spends the mana removing your 2-drop that you invested next to nothing, right? Like. Sure.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I hope it shows up at Clash because I feel like it would lead to an interesting game. So I hope we see this one in practice. All right, let's move on to my first pick. And I got a new card, which I haven't played much in Commander yet, but I've played it in other formats. And this is going to sound crazy, but this card is basically the uncommon version of Roaming Throne, I'm going to say. It gives me the same vibe, where every time I play this card, I'm like, oh, it synergizes with this, and it synergizes with this, and it did that cool thing. And this card is Ferdot Core. So I know, it looks like a 3-mana mana rock, and 3-mana mana rocks are out of style.
Bring in the standard combo in here.
Not even that, though. Like, it really is Roaming Throne.
What's
so,
the combo?
It's a 3-mana mana rock, but it has Changeling, so it's all creature types. And at first glance, when I saw this card, I was like, okay, yeah, fun gimmick for Lorwyn Eclipse, a Changeling mana rock. But then once I started messing around with this card, it just synergizes with everything like Roaming Throne does. If you just look at the most popular commanders, like the top 10, Ur-Dragon makes it cost 2 mana. You have Edgar Markov, it'll make a vampire token. A Kranko, it makes more goblin tokens. The Discover Dinosaur thing, it triggers it. Lathril, it'll trigger it. Yuriko, it's a ninja. It just like synergizes with everything. And you go further down the list, and when you tap it, if you have Magda Brazen Outlaw, it makes a treasure token. Or Invoja Fill, it's a wolf and an elf, so it's going to double trigger
just
by being a mana rock. Like, and then there are combos for it where you can go infinite with like Intruder Alarms and Deep Root Pilgrimages and stuff. But I actually think, like, yes, there are some decks. If you have zero creature type matter synergies, then this really is just a worse Darksteel ingot or whatever. Like, you wouldn't want to play this card. But I think if you're a deck that has any creature type synergies, and like Roaming Throne, I think this is one of the cards that when you put it in your deck, you're going to be like, oh, I didn't even think that it worked with this, but now it's doing this cool thing. I actually think this is a really very, very playable mana rock in pretty much any deck that has creature type synergies. But what do you guys think? Is this the Roaming Throne of mana rocks?
I think if you have a Valley Flood Caller in your deck, you can go off with this, right? Because
that's
a standard combo for those that don't know. Valley Flood Caller, cast a bunch of just cantrips. This untaps, and when you animate it, it'll be like a 100-100, right?
Yep. That's funny.
so you can definitely do. There's like a Toph combo too. If you're Toph first Metalbender deck, you can go infinite with it.
I had a crappy mono black standard deck that was Mox Jaspers and Unholy Annexes in this.
Yeah.
And then obviously Doomsday Excruciator to try and win the game. But not as good as Dimir, but I had my fun.
I see it as a combo piece. And that's the only way you truly utilize that it is a changeling or a whatever and everything, right?
I don't know. It's like, I recently built a Volja deck. And
you monster.
It's the perfect curve, right? You play
on three, a this wolf on and three, an elf.
And then Vol'jin on four. That, yep. I think I'm going to dig this out of my bulk, actually. That seems kind of perfect.
It's in my Ur-Dragon deck. It's literally in
worst case.
Yes. It's in my Ur-Dragon deck.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's cheaper.
Worst case, it's an Arcane Signet. But best case, most of the things that I that care about creatures or creature types don't say it's specifically creatures. Like my Spellsetter sprite just says it counters equal to the number of fairies you control. Not fairy creatures.
Yeah.
Some of them specify
creatures,
but like a lot of them are just like, it's just like whatever number of different X thing. It doesn't say X creatures. So yeah, I think this card is super legit. It's not going to fit in every single like creature type deck, but like there are going to be certain decks where you're focusing on creature types and it's just like, you might have overlooked this one because it just actually adds a lot of extra bonuses to your deck that you didn't think about. So yeah, I'm on board.
And it's like 25 cents or something. It's like an imprint uncommon. So it's about as cheap as a Magic card can get you. So yeah, if you got creature type Mandarus decks, check out Verdakkor because I think it might actually surprise you with how much it does. But let's go back to the top of the order. Tomer, can you top Chaos Moon somehow? Do you have a better
card? Maybe even stronger than Chaos Moon. At least less counting. Okay, I have one. It's also four mana. It's a four mana white instant called Surprise Deployment. Surprise. And this spell is from Plane Shift, and it says cast a spell only during combat. You may put a non-white creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. At the beginning of your next end step, return that creature to your hand. So this is kind of like white's very weird sneak attack cousin. You can only play it during combat, but you can like play at the beginning of combat. And then if it has haste or whatever, you can attack with it. And then it comes back to your hand. So it's a little bit of like a little bit of a blinky action, a little bit of a sneak attacky option. There is the downside, though, of like, oh, you can't drop white creatures. And obviously, this is a white card. So you need to be in white, but you can't put white creatures in with it. But I'm going to tell you straight up, if you're in like Naya and you have Itali Primal Conqueror in your deck, maybe you want to have a four mana Itali Primal Conqueror that returns back to your hand so you can put back onto the battlefield afterwards. Maybe you want a four mana Crater Hope Behemoth. Maybe you can immediately attack too, by the way, because it only returns at the end of combat. You can do Massacre Worms. You can do like a whole bunch of silly things with this card. It is a hilarious, hilarious card that nobody actually thinks about. And it has like actual homes, like Mael of the Enema can run this card, I think, or like Kalia decks, especially ones that are focused more on demons and dragons rather than angels. Like, this is another way of just getting them out onto the battlefield. Pantlazza, too. Most of the dinosaurs are not white. They're usually green and then sometimes red. Those are the two primary colors. And then you can, like, Pantlazza, put something in, and you get Discover. Oh, for Krim, to win Krim over? I know he's been enjoying a certain shark, Armagon. What if you surprise deployment in Armagon, destroy three creatures? You know, it's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun card. What do you guys say? Is it a Chaos
First
Moon?
Off, can I ask you a question? What's Mael's name to you?
Mael? I don't know.
Can you read the full card? The what?
Is it not? Oh my god.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Mael the Anima.
Oh, okay.
Mael
right,
of
cool.
the Anima? What is her
no,
name?
No, no,
oh,
no, no,
no.
I think that was all. I just was curious how you said it.
Mael the Anima? What's wrong with that? The Naya one.
Hey, what's up,
Why
dude?
Is
okay,
everybody
well,
laughing?
So, don't worry about it, Tomer.
How do you say Anima?
I just thought I thought I heard
you,
something.
I think you said it right, Tomer. I think you're good. You're good.
How does Seth say the name?
Oh, Mael of the Anima, yeah. I think.
Yeah, the Anima.
It's
okay.
Anima,
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but, I agree. That's good. Sunrise Deployment otherwise as a card, though, right?
Yeah.
I think that card, it's five. It's like five mana, right?
Four mana.
It's four. Four mana.
Four mana.
Is it four mana?
It's four.
Okay.
It's four mana. Yeah. Oh, and you can ambush opposing creatures too because it's a surprise.
You could.
Right?
You could.
Wait, if you put something in with haste, beginning of combat, it's still a combat, right? So you can
you gotta do it before they declare attacks. But yeah, if you do it at the beginning of combat, you can do it.
And I mean, we'll
put a foil start at $3 in Europe, by the way. I am already checking. I love this.
I actually think
I don't have a copy yet.
I actually think I could see playing this card. Like, it seems very good with ETBs. I love my Panharmonicon decks, just a way you can sneak some big ETB thing and trigger it. As you mentioned, Tomer, like, if you have really powerful ETBs, like Atalies or Armagon or whatever, then the card becomes great. Or like Galta, that you dump all your permanents into play. You do that for 4 mana, then dump everything into play. Or Jubilation, or Crater of... Like, I actually think this card could have uses. And on EDH Rec, it's literally 0.01.
It.
It's like literally about as unplayed as you can possibly be. Yeah.
What set?
It's almost as strong as Chaos.
Plane Shift. Yeah.
Plane Shift.
Uncommon.
Yeah.
I like it, Tomer. I think I like it better than Chaos.
Home for
and
this,
the art goes hard. But,
I mean, yeah, it's already better than Chaos Moves.
I don't know about that, but
yeah, that lion is surprising him for sure.
I think I'm just gonna snag one of these in old butterfoil just because it's gonna look so beautiful. And who has ever seen this card?
Yeah.
And then at some point, I built like some. It's probably good in dinosaurs. There's got to be like decks,
Prismatic Bridge,
where it
maybe
just naturally
the wall of creatures
fits in.
Mael
got to be good somewhere. It's got to be good. I love it.
Yeah, I like this one too. I think that's a good pick. Let's move on to Crit.
I'm still looking for this card, literally. What is this?
Surprise deployment.
Ooh, maybe Ur-Dragon, like that. The dragon version
deployment.
Of Ur-Dragon.
Surprise deployment, yeah.
Okay, not sunrise deployment.
No. Surprise. No. It's like, surprise.
I'm like, what are we talking about?
Did I bungle Mael and surprise?
Mael, I just heard something else, I swear. But okay. This I think is sweet. Yes, I think surprise deployment is sweet. I haven't seen this in so long. Holy hell! This is like playground rule, like surprise gotcha moment.
Yeah,
right?
It really
so, okay.
is.
This card is so old, dude. Oh my god! This
card's 2007. That's not that old.
Okay.
2001.
2001. 25 years old.
I think this card's sweet. I mean, I remember during this era, there's a lot of only play during combat, which kind of made it annoying. But this card was pretty sweet and can definitely catch people slipping here.
The only thing I would say before we move on to the next one is you do got to be careful. Like, when it says non-white creature, that would also exclude multicolored creatures that have white in
Atraxa.
Their cost,
yes.
Right? So you
no
can't
Atraxa.
Put like a three color, like an Atraxa into play. But mana symbols in the text box wouldn't matter because that's a color identity thing, not an actual color thing. So, but yeah, I think the card definitely could have some sweet uses. But let's move on to Phil. Phil, what is your next hidden tech card?
All right. So my hidden tech card is a card that I found in my collection and I remembered it from, I think, Legacy. And there is definitely, it's not like this very unknown thing, but it is a card that is underplayed in Commander, I think. It is Elephant Grass for 1 green, cumulative upkeep 1, and then black creatures cannot attack you, full stop, and then non-black creatures cannot attack you unless their controller pays an additional 2 for each attacking creature. So it is Ghostly Prison. Unless you play black creatures, then they can't attack at all. It is cumulative upkeep, so you play it is kind of like Mystic Remora, pretty much very similar. Good thing it's from, I think, Visions, so it should be brutally overprinted, so it is super cheap, even though it's old. We've seen it back in the day in Legacy Enchantress decks, I think, and it is probably still a staple in Commander Enchantress, although 0.26%. That is very low. I don't know. So how many times do you play it is 1 mana. So you can wait until the game gets dangerous and then put it into play. It's not like Ghostly Prisoner. You just run out on 3 and say, here you go. Please stop attacking me. This one is a little more situational, but you pay 2 times and then you're 1 up from Ghosted Prison. Usually you play Ghosted Prison. I think it will just work just like Ghosted Prison, and you pay for it 2 or 3 times and then the game is over because somebody else got hit and not you. This seems super solid.
This card is something that I've been sitting, like, I've been getting more and more high on this card over time. Like, the main thing that, like, I think Ghostly Prison has over this is Ghostly Prison, you can slam this down on turn 3, and then you just don't take poke damage. So your life total is going to be, like, pokeless until the late game. And this one, you wait until the late game to play it. But, like, yeah, you just hold it into your hand until, like, turn 7, 8 when things are getting, like, really spicy on the battlefield. And black creatures, like, straight up cannot hit you. So if they're, like, Voltron-y black decks, they can't hit you until they get rid of this. And it's cheaper than a Ghostly Prison if you're playing it in, like, the last, you know, 2 turns of the game or whatever. So I feel like this card is actually kind of sick. And the fact that you can just hold on to it and you just play for 1 mana, and then boom, you have, like, propaganda-ish effects for a third of the price for a full turn cycle. And then the following turn, you just pay 1 mana. It's like, that's sick. This card's so good.
It's kind of hilarious. We didn't, usually when we do a podcast, we share a list of cards so we don't accidentally pick the same cards. This was actually the next card up on my list too. I had this as one of my hidden tech cards for, like, literally the exact same reasons that you and Tomer have been saying. But, like, we play Ghostly Prison and Propaganda all the time. Even everyone does. On EDH Rec, they're like 14% of decks, 11% of decks. This is like 0.3 or something percent of decks. Like, no one plays this card. And I think, I don't have much to add. You do exactly what you said. You just wait till the mid to late game, then you play this, you can keep it around for the rest of the game. And it's absolutely insane. It's a 1 mana plus cumulative upkeep Ghostly Prison. So yeah, I'm all in on this one too.
This set is loaded with so many wild cards though. If you think about Visions, like, you have City of Solitude as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many good cards from this set. And Elephant Grass is another one that, like, I don't play because that's a stacks piece, guys. I don't know.
No, come on.
Stacks. But
still,
like,
it's not
a stacks piece.
No.
You may not know this, but do you see how the word can't there?
Can't.
There ain't no way that you're going to give me crap ever, and then y'all are going to bring up Ghostly Prisons. Like, you play more stacks pieces than I do. Do you guys know that?
It's so funny. That? I don't think of those effects as stacks pieces, but I guess I can see where you're coming from, yeah.
How are these not stacks pieces?
But it's more looser stacks. It's like, okay,
no,
you,
it's
can't
not.
Attack. You can't attack. You can attack. You just can't attack me as opposed to, like,
okay.
Winter Orb. It's like, you can untap, but you can only untap one. It's like, well,
okay,
can't
all
really
right,
play around it as
sure.
much. Come on,
sure.
I agree. It's stacks light. Maybe
it
stacks
is,
light.
Yeah, it is stacks.
Not even stacks light. It's full stack.
Nah. You don't need to attack. I'm not messing with you. You try to mess with me if you get stacks.
Okay,
by this and then it's kind of on you, right?
So, I don't think that's how that works.
That's like Lightning Greaves of stacks because I can't target your Greave target.
That is,
like,
true.
Okay, you know that's
true.
Not the same.
Come on.
You know that's not the same because
Checks
straight up,
up
you remove a full outlet of gameplay where I can no longer hit you or do anything to you.
You can also do whatever
wait,
I want to
talking about
else. Have you considered hitting Seth instead? Like, come on.
Okay, all right. Sure. Just, I'll remember to keep that reasoning.
I mean, the other thing I'd add about this card, it goes up even more in value if you are Enchantress, like Seth is or something, then it's drawing a good card. Also great with decks that can recur it, like Moldralfa, where you don't even have to pay the upkeep. You can just sack it and then replay it from your graveyard and have the upkeep reset or cumulative upkeep reset every time. So I think it gets even better in those decks, but I think you can play it like the green Ghostly Prison if you want to, and I think it might actually be worth.
Like,
let's move on to
decks.
Krim. Krim, what stacks piece do you have for your hidden deck?
Believe it or not, I have no stacks pieces on my deck. But
trash.
Something I do want to bring up is we always talk about graveyard hate, and I've brought up Ghost Vacuum before, right? And so Magic has continued to staple more things to, like, I think graveyard hate that actually is not disrespectful to just play in the main deck. And I think a card that just came out recently is called the Ooze from the Ninja Turtles set.
Oh, yeah.
This card, it plays nicely, of course, with 1-1 counters. So if you're like a 1-1 counter, like super focused deck, it's great. Because whenever a creature you control with a 1-1 counter on it leaves the battlefield, create a mutagen token for each 1-1 counter on it. But you get to just tap it, exile target card from a graveyard, any card, create a mutagen token. For those that don't know what a mutagen does, you get to just pay one, sack the token at sorcery speed, give a 1-1 counter. So it kind of just fulfills itself. Right, it kind of just does the thing. It gives you more mutagen tokens because once a creature of yours with a 1-1 counter on it leaves, it does the whole thing over and over and over, but it's also graveyard hate. So I more so like this in creature-based decks where, like, let's just say, like, my humans deck or maybe something that is more aggressive and cares about its power and toughness. Obviously, I'm not playing this in draw go, but I do think that in a creature-based deck, being able to just grow my creatures and be responsible and graveyard hate people out of the game, while also meaning that if I lose the creature, the ooze kind of just refunds me all the mutagen tokens I've kind of made and used. I really like this. And I know it's nothing crazy. It's nothing super flashy. And for those that hate turtles, I got bad news for you. It's here. But the one thing that I do think from a gameplay perspective, I think it's nice to have more graveyard hate that doesn't feel just outright weird to play in the main deck or in the 99. And I think this is another one of those cards that I just really like.
This card's really impressed me in Standard. I haven't played it in Commander yet, but just like playing with this card a bunch, it plays way better than it reads. When I first read it, I was like, okay, it's probably fine. But then I started playing it and I was like, wow, this card actually, like, it's graveyard hate. My creatures are bigger, which a single plus one counter doesn't sound like that much. But then actually it does add up and have impact on the battlefield. And then the real payoff is, whenever a creature with the counters on it leaves the battlefield, not even dies. So if it gets blinked or if it gets bounced or whatever, you're going to get mutagen tokens for all those counters. So I think I would have to be a plus one counter theme deck. I don't think I would play this in just like a random creature deck. But if I'm a deck built around plus one counters, I think the ooze is actually like kind of bonkers.
I mean, it's graveyard hate even in a creature deck. Let's just say, like I had mentioned, like humans, right? I care about being aggressive.
Okay, how about this, Grim? But what about Ghost Vacuum? Because I feel like if I want to do that, just like pick a random thing in the graveyard, I feel like unless I have counter synergies, I would value the ability to get the 1-1 copies with Ghost Vacuum over that if I'm not a counter style deck.
I do like Ghost Vacuum a lot because of that, right? Because it becomes a win con in itself at a later point. But believe it or not, this is kind of like a graveyard hate for a different part of the game. Ghost Vacuum is something that can scale into being the late game. The Ooze is something that keeps my pressure and like my foot on the gas, right? Because, you know, it gets real awkward when, you know, you just can't swing past stuff. And the Ghost Vacuum only gets you back creatures. This card doesn't care what you exile. As long as you exile a card, you will then get just a mutagen token. For that, I guess in that sense, the Ooze has a wider wider, you know, abilities, more things it can do, right? Whatever it needs.
Would you play both of them, Krim? Like, how many of this effect can you play? Like, can you play Ghost Vacuum and the Ooze? Or are you getting to the, like, diminishing returns, too many of the effect stage?
There is a point where there is diminishing returns, because if you have too many of these, then there's not enough stuff to eat in the graveyard, right? Yeah. But having two copies of this in a multiplayer game that you can activate at instant speed and are actually just outright good effects and I think reward you, I think two is fine. I could see me playing both of these.
What do you guys think, Phil and Tomer? Where are you guys at on this one?
I prefer the Ghost Vacuum, but I really do like Ghost Vacuum, and I think this is similar yet not as fun, because Ghost Vacuum set kind of creates, it's not even tokens, but it kind of creates copies, steals stuff. The ceiling of Ghost Vacuum is just absurd. This one creates value that is way more accessible, because it's way more likely to crack the mutagen and actually crack the Ghost Vacuum, which rarely happens because it gets removed, because you win the game if you crack it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't play both if you have the ooze. It is kind of funny that it's expensive right now, but if you have the ooze, play it in a deck,
$10 maybe,
then you should probably put it into a could put it into a generic deck, just like Ghost Vacuum, I admit that. Yeah.
Mm. I'm undecided. I feel like I'm not super fan of the mutagen token just because it costs one mana to crack it. And if
it's also your speed, right?
It is sorcery speed, yeah. If it was like zero mana, I'd be like, hell yeah, that would be sick. But because it's like, it's basically you're paying three mana, you exile a thing from a graveyard and you put a counter on something. And then subsequent turns, it gets a little bit better. And if you're using it primarily as a graveyard hate, then it's also good. So I don't know. I feel like value-wise, it's not enough for me unless I care about like the tokens that are being made or the +1/+1 counters being made. If I do care a lot about those things, then I'm very much on board with the ooze. But like, am I going to throw in like a random deck because I need graveyard hates? Probably not so much. But like, you know, counters and then token synergies or artifact synergies, then it starts, you know, the stonks go up.
I've definitely had games where I've like had a creature with a ton of counters leave the battlefield and I get like 10 mutagen. I'm like, that's super cool, but that's so much mana to crack them. So I have run into the, like, you can actually get mutagen flooded, where unless you have mutagen mana or, like, some way to reduce the cost, you can actually have more mutagen than you can realistically crack. Although, once you had, like, a Jahira or other synergies for that end of the mix, then having a bunch of these artifact tokens around actually becomes very good.
Or you just have, like, Forgotten Ancient sitting around, and it has, like, 15 counters on it, and it dies or whatever, and then you get, like, 15 tokens. That feels good.
Believe it or not, creature lands are pretty sweet with this, because those get around all the sweepers and stuff. Spot removal is the only way you can get rid of creature lands. And believe it or not, I feel like a lot of people have forgotten that creature lands, yes, they are tapped, but Commander in a casual, like, format is slow enough. And I find myself still loving my creeping tar pits and my celestial colonnades. Yeah, I know. I'm still activating these cards in the current year, baby. I don't know. I mean, the ooze just seems really sweet with those cards.
Also very good with Earthbend lands because I naturally have counters on them. So any Earthbend lands leave the battlefield, you get mutagens for free. But yeah, there's a lot of synergies. For me, it's a synergy piece, but if you have the synergies, I think it's very good. But all right, let's move on to my second pick in this one. So we did one of these like a few years ago, and I tried to pitch y'all on a card called Glacial Crevasses, which is a 3-mana red enchantment that says, sack a snow-covered mountain, no creatures deal damage in combat this turn. So essentially, sack a snow-covered mountain to fog. So I tried to pitch you on this because I love my fogs. I was like, oh, this is great, right? It sits out, you have extra lands, you sack the mountains. No one seemed super enthused by it. But now I realized there's actually a better version of this. I pitched you on the wrong one. It's not Glacial Crevasses we should be talking about. It's the Ice Age Uncommon Sunstone. So Sunstone is a 3-mana artifact, and its ability is pay 2, sack a snowland, any snowland, in fog for the turn. Prevent all combat damage that would be dealt this turn. So this is a repeatable fog. It's 2-mana. But that's okay. We've seen 2-mana fogs, maybe 2-mana fogs with buyback that you can sack a land to fog, be very, very strong in Commander, even oppressively strong in Commander. So I think this card's kind of insane, right? It just sits out. As long as you play a bunch of snow-covered lands, you can sack them whenever you want to, kind of like the card that Phil pitched earlier. You have this fog threat sitting on the battlefield. And if you're a deck that cares about lands going in and out of the graveyard, you got Lord Windgrace synergies or something, then it gets even better. But I actually think this card might be a reason to play snow-covered lands. But what do you guys think? Is this another Glacial Crevasse, or is this the one? Is this the one that's actually good? Did I crack it finally? Snowland to fog.
Honestly, first of all, you get style points because never seen this card. It's only printed in Ice Age, and it looks crazy with the full blue art.
Yeah, the art is actually super cool.
I have so many of these in my bulk. I don't know why.
It seems like, I guess you got to play snow-covered lands, and so far we haven't seen good duels.
Right.
So you got to be very... come on.
Hey, you have those duels with the land
it's
types,
constant
though,
mist.
From Kaldheim.
It's constant mist.
It
an
is
artifact.
Constant mist. That's what I was going to say. A constant mist plays super well and is very oppressive, which for something like this is almost a good thing, because if you oppress with Fox, it's their fault if they want to attack you. They want to stop you from doing the fun thing. So, this, oh man, more snow support, and I'm very on board.
All right, so not enough snow support. What do you think, Grim? Can this work?
I just don't see the this would essentially be another build around, right?
I mean, to the extent you'd have to be a bunch of snow lands at least, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I guess like snow lands are kind of free.
The basics.
But you're loaded up on basics. I don't know. I mean, there's no great snow payoff for me yet. I think that's the thing. Like, if I'm gonna want to play these snow lands and do this whole thing with snow mana, I'm gonna want to load it up with Scred and just kind of just be a generic ice age deck, right? And I don't know if there's enough of a payoff yet for me.
Not enough snow support overall. Is that the bottom line, basically?
The biggest drawback is that, to be honest with you. If we were returning like Kaldheim or something like that, and I think we need like another two sets of snow cards.
But what about just like swapping your basic lands for snow covered basics and running it in like a green deck? When I think of Constant Miss, it's great in green decks, right? Because green gets so many lands on the battlefield, and in the late game you can afford to sack them. Could I just play 25 snow-covered forests instead of 25 forests and be like, I got Sunstone and I got two Constant Mist now? I mean, would that work, Tomer?
It's just better to have snow lands over basics. That's why I also don't want more snow payoffs, because it's like, well, if snow basics are strictly better than regular basics, then what's the point of regular basics? Like,
this happens.
We don't have Oak Water Forest.
But that's why I don't like the design of it. Like, if snow was like only non-basic or non, like, I don't like the snow basics. But whatever, that's my own. That's a different gripe. I think this card is playable specifically if you can be proactive with it, which is my same thing with the Dawnstrider. Is like, if you a Constant Miss is very good because it's very hard to interact with, right? You either have counterspell or you can't, or like a damage can't be prevented spell, or you're not getting through it. Whereas Sunstone, you put a Sunstone on the battlefield, any artifact removal, and it's gone. And then you can start killing the person. So I don't like it as like, oh, Infinite Fog, as to the same level of like a Constant Mist or Glacial Chasm. But if you are like in Titania, for example, mono green, I sacrifice lands for value. This is great. I would just make all my lands snow, and I would have a sack outlet whenever I want that doubles as this great fog effect. And it would also be running Constant Mist and also Glacial Chasm.
Like it more than like Dawnstrider, because Dawnstrider taps, right? This allows me to play ball in that, like, as long as I have mana up, I can like fog. But Tomer's right, this sitting out, you definitely have to go now, right? Like, whereas at least we could all like punch you down and team up with Dawnstrider, but for as much as you've got every increment of two mana and lands you're willing to sack, this becomes much harder to beat you down with. And this will draw the ire of the table and will draw the spot removal, right? Like, it has to. And if it doesn't, then it's over anyways. But at the same time, this is just a worse version of, like, I guess, Constant Mists and like Glacial Chasm, but that's still really good.
I mean, it's worse, most colors can but blow it's it colorless, which is kind of the unique part, right? You could be a mono blue Sunstone deck if you wanted to.
Yeah, but everyone gets access to this, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna experiment with it. I think it's worth trying. I really like fogs. Yes, it is an upside compared to Dawnstrider, that in theory, if they're coming at you, you could fog one, then the next, then the next. How much you can do that, though, that's like a lot of mana and a lot of lands you're losing. So kind of like Constant Miss, if everyone's really coming at you, eventually you're probably going to run out of lands to sacrifice. But still, like, I don't know. I think it's worth exploring at a minimum. I also don't know if I want more snow-covered stuff, because when they did Modern Horizons, the first one in Modern, it became like there was no punishment to play snow-covered lands. So everyone just always played snow-covered lands because there was no downside and a little upside. And then that just ended up being a big problem. It makes it less fun when snow-covered lands are just like strictly better than normal basics. So hopefully,
how do you punish
that.
It? Like, you could say, "Oh, well, punishment exists," but like, how would you introduce snow punishment in Commander? It's like,
nobody's gonna be running stone rain.
That's
for
the problem,
lands.
Right? You can destroy all snow-covered lands, but why would you put that in your deck so it doesn't actually do anything? It would have to be like It would have to be flexible. Like, draw three cards for four mana, or choose to destroy all snow-covered lands or something. Like, yeah, it would have to be some like sort of modal, just like spells. Tack on, yeah, blow up snow lands.
And then you have to run those cards. This is like a...
Yeah, it's kind of a mess, but... all right, let's do one last round, but let's do a lightning round. So this is just going to be a quick one. One last chance to get your card out there. We're not going to bait you or anything, but one last chance to get a sleeper out into the world for the viewers. Tomer, we'll start it off with you.
Okay. This hurts because there's two that I really want to... I'll just say the name of the other one.
Mirror Form. Double lightning round.
Mirror Form. Super fun card. It's my favorite combat trick.
Oh, that's not a sleeper. That card's busted, yeah.
Oh, okay. It's not a
sleeper. Wait, Mirror Form. That's the six mana everything becomes a thing one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, I love that. That's like my favorite card. But it's so good. Oh, I love it.
It's the coolest freaking card in Princess Yue because you turn all your other creatures into the moon and then they come back as moons, but they're still their own thing. It's so freaking cool.
That's so good.
But I wanted to stick to my old obscure cards that work really well. And oh, this is a red and it's instant. Ooh la la, works very well in Chaos Moon decks. It's Mercadia's Downfall. Mercadia's Downfall, 3-mana red, instant. It says each attacking creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn for each non-basic lane defending player's control. So if you're an opponent, all my creatures, and you have 5 non-basics, which is a low end of casting a spell like this when you're trying to kill people with an overrun, that all the attacking creatures get +5/+0. If you have like 10 non-basics, which is probably like more realistic, all attacking creatures +10/+0. And it doesn't have to be my attacking creatures. I can do this when somebody else is attacking and I can pop up those creatures too. And you know what? As a mono red player, I think everybody should be running more basics. And if not, I'm going to punish you with Mercadia's Downfall.
Have you played this on Clash before? Someone killed me with this on Commander Clash. I know someone killed me with this on Commander Clash a few seasons ago now.
She's a man of taste.
Maybe it was Richard, yeah. But no, that's a good one. Phil, lightning round. What do you got for another sleeper?
All right, this one, I don't even know if it's a sleeper. It has a 1.7% play inclusion.
Okay.
That said, I don't see it a lot. Even though it should make sense in our playgroup, and I play tested it a bunch in Brawl and in some Commander decks. It is also in kind of all my Clash decks or a lot of them, but I just never draw it. It is Final Showdown. There's 1 white and then Spree. All creatures lose all abilities. Choose a creature you control. It gains indestructible until end of turn. Both of these cost an additional colorless. And then if you pay an additional 5, 3 colorless and 2 white, destroy all creatures. So you can, this one's kind of rough for a quick pitch here, but you can have everything lose all abilities. That happens first. So I recently used this. Somebody board wiped, somebody Boros charmed, everything indestructible. And then in response, everything loses everything. And then the board wipe resolves anyway. You can also remove, so you can't really protect yourself from this board wipe with indestructibility, because before this everything loses indestructible unless you give one creature you control indestructible with this. But you can also pay just 2 and save a creature you control from board wipe. It is super flexible. It plays way better. It kind of reads very good, but I just rarely see it, and it's so interesting. All creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. Great against busted stuff like, I don't know, Voja maybe. Maybe Lonus. You can host creature combos. Right?
I mean, it's almost like a dress down, right? Like, it's kind of like a white dress down on top of... Yeah.
So good. I love this card so much, yeah.
I remember when it was spoiled, I was like, this is going to be the best card from the set, and then no one ever played it. So I also think it's, I got potential. Krim, what do you got? Yeah, one more hidden tech card for us.
I really like Smirking Spelljacker. This is a 5 mana Outlaws of Thunder Junction card.
Jerking four and a blue. What?
Oh yeah.
Smirking Spelljacker.
Smirking. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, flash flying when it enters the battlefield, exile target spell an opponent controls. This whenever Smirking Spelljacker attacks, if a card is exiled with it, you may cast the exiled card without paying its mana cost. So this is just one of those super sweet, tempo-y playstyles that I like playing. It eats the spell, which, okay, sure, whatever. The one thing that's nice about that, though, is you get to cast said spell at a later point. Now, that is huge, and it having flash, it's everything that I like about Magic the Gathering. And then on top of that, because of all the people who have like Cavern of Souls or maybe like a Baseju or something that is uncounterable naturally, which is way more prominent in the current year, this card can just come down, eat it off the stack, and then just call it a day. And that on its own, that's every blue mage's dream right there. Uncounterable? Well, what if I made your uncounterable irrelevant, right? So, like, this is a card that is very tempo play that also gets you plus a card, and it gets you plus a card in a way where it could swing the game. If I'm able to hit your, I don't know, whatever, your Breach the Multiverse or maybe Dream Harvest, this is huge, right? Or your biggest and best threats. Like, this card does work often. And, this is one of those things that I just thoroughly enjoy flashing in. There's other versions of this, and I'd shout them out too, but like there's the dragon from Dragonstorm Tarkir, but that one's six mana.
Oh, yes, love this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I love these cards because it solves the issue of, like, okay, if I'm draw go, I sit there, I can counter you, whatever, but I don't have a body. And sometimes you just need a body because people are going to punch you after you countered them. Or you need a way to just kind of do the old close them out. And instead of Augur of Bolas beat down three other people, it is marginally stronger, but the main thing here is it is still a body, right?
I didn't even know this was a card.
Should have been a fairy. Should have been a fairy.
If this were a fairy, that would have been beautiful,
should have,
right?
Copied the spell? That would be bonkers. First time I read this, I thought it copies the spell whenever you swing with it. So
you got cast triggers, unlimited. Too.
Yeah, cast trigger, though, has proven to be very nice.
Oh, right, it's gone after. So you use it once, and then it's not in exile anymore. But, I mean, if you get a big spell for free, hopefully that's enough.
Yeah, it's like how many turns do you think you're going to have with this before it dies, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's also
true.
Yeah,
in this case, the Transcendent Dragon is the six mana thing. This one, you can just cast it right away.
Hmm.
Both of them, I think, play well.
You gotta be drunk.
I love them both. I love them both. I mean, obviously, Transcendent Dragon is six mana, but like, I love them both. And I love these kind of cards. That's why I like Urtai. I like, you know, the Mystic Snake Power Crept is always nice.
Stacks. Stacks. These are stacks pieces, Krem. They're stacks pieces.
You play your spell.
They say, like, can't resolve the spell.
You flicker it in response to a spell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Or you can ninjutsu it, sneak, whatever. I mean, they clearly made sneak as a way so they could bring back that kind of mechanic in non-ninja sets. So this means that there's going to be a world where you can bounce this back in some way, shape, or form.
Definitely seems like a Krim card, for sure. I could see you having 100%. Great success with this card. Well, all right, for my last pick, since Elephant Grass is off the table, I'm going to have to go to my backup. And this card, I just don't understand why people don't play it. And I was hoping that you would explain it to me, but we're doing a lightning mode, so maybe we won't get to that. But Riftstone Portal, this card used to, I think, see more play. You might know what it was. It's a land from Judgment. It's uncommon. It comes into play untapped. It has a colorless mana.
Oh.
But if it's in your graveyard, all lands tap for green or white mana. So I used to mock Chromatic Lanterns, the World Trees, because I feel they're unnecessary, right? If you build a good mana base, you shouldn't need Chromatic Lantern. You shouldn't need a World Tree. And I still think that's true. But one thing I've realized playing Commander is there is benefit to just diminishing your mental load. Like, not, you don't want to have to spend time thinking about how you tap your lands. You'd rather be able to spend your brain power thinking about what your opponent's doing or your next turn or whatever. Something more important than tapping your mana, which is just the boringest, least meaningful part of your game. So I've come to believe there actually is value in giving yourself perfect mana, even if it's not really necessary, just because it's going to make you play better by letting you think about more important things. And this is a card that, to me, it feels like if you are in its colors, and you can reasonably get lands in the graveyard. So I'm talking Necrobloom or Yuma, like land sack decks, or self-mill style decks like Toskia, where you're filling your graveyard. Is this not just a free roll? Why would you not play that? Like, it seems like a free roll. If you have to play it as a land, it only makes colorless mana, but it still comes into play on tap. So in a pinch, like, it's still functional if you're forced to play it. Best case, you just mill it over and you get perfect mana for the rest of the game. Why does no one play this card?
Because they don't have the old border foil, or else they would.
that might be it. Debating playing this in Necrobloom, but never did. If I had the old border foil, though,
then it's also a plane chase, right?
I think just the main thing is that it's
Judgment. It's from Judgment.
But like,
Judgment. Okay.
Yeah, if you can consistently get this in the graveyard, that's sick. And then if you have an old border foil, it's
double
way
sick.
More sick.
Even sicker.
It is nice to not have to think about it. I mean, for those same reasons we play Lantern, and Tomer and I love
a good Chromatic Lantern. Dogged for a, we were championing Chromatic Lantern just for less thinky and more RAM focus on the actual game.
The task
and
at hand.
You were getting dogged. It's like, garbage.
I've come around.
Why do you need the thinky? Because I'm getting old and thinky is hard, okay? There's a lot of stuff. The game is very complicated. I want to think about other stuff. I don't want to think like, about the next snack I'm going to have, you know? Like
that plays into time equity, by the way. If I sit here and have to watch you figure out how you're going to cast like an ultimatum.
I would give you a notch on Portal in your graveyard if I could, just so you can tap your lands in a timely manner. Come on now.
I need to not think about how my lands tap so I can think about how many permits are on the battlefield for my Chaos
You need
moon,
time for counting.
Yes. The RAM allocation, okay?
Anyway, those are our hidden deck cards. Those are our sleeper picks. Let us know what you think. Do you like any of these? Have you played any of these? Do you have a favorite hidden deck card that no one knows about? Let us know about that too. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, everyone, have a spectacular week. And this is a crew signing out.